and Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga. Just minutes from the track. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on a Saturday Travers Day. It looks like it's going to be a gorgeous day. Handicapper support is a little overcast, but the sun is breaking through now, and it looks like it's going to be a spectacular Saturday afternoon. Certainly on track it will be with the Travers and a great undercard of stakes action. So we are really looking forward to that and looking forward to the next hour as well here on Racing Across America. Coming up a little bit later on, they upset the Derby. We'll talk to Eric Reed, Rich Strike in today's Travers, working very well for the Travers. So we'll get a little update there and reflection on what that Kentucky Derby meant to him and the team and whatnot. Also have some tape pieces. John Velasquez had his 1,000th Saratoga victory a couple days ago, and I had the camera rolling in the winner's circle when he was interviewed by the various reporters. So we'll see a little of that, his walk back to the jocks room with the crowd lining the jocks walk back, and a lot of selfies and autographs. That was a lot of fun. So we'll have a tape piece there. Caught up with Brad Cox in the paddock a couple of days ago. He gave me a minute or two on Cyberknife, so we'll see that a little bit later on as well. But happy to be joined at the top of the program after just a spectacular Saratoga win the other day. That was a lot of fun. We'll talk about that and much more with Jackie Davis. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you on board to talk a little bit, as I say, about the Saratoga victory and whatnot. But first, we were talking just before we went on the air about the weather and whatnot. You were working out on the track today. Give us a little update on the track condition.
So I did get a chance to get on the track early this morning, and I breezed a young horse that they shipped in from Finger Lakes, hasn't run yet, and she got a hold of it beautifully. And it looks like it's Speed Harrowed. It looks like it's going to be quick.
Okay.
But if the weather is like the way it looks and it clears up, it should be a beautiful track for the Travers, I think.
Yeah, knock wood. Looking forward to a big day. I had your brother Dylan in just about a couple weeks ago, I think it was. And, of course, the Robbie Davis family, the triumvirate of sibling jockeys. And
yep.
Talk a little bit about you grew up here in Saratoga, like Dylan. You're a Saratoga native, or you were bouncing back early on?
I'm about 6 years older than Dylan, so we did a lot of traveling growing up with Dad. We did Florida in the winter, Saratoga every summer. And when I was about halfway through high school, Dad retired.
Okay.
And then we moved up here permanently. And so I did 2 years of high school and a year of college up here. I still consider myself a native.
Yeah,
and Dylan and Katie actually grew up here because they were in elementary school. But yeah, we all grew up. And then I started the way to racing. And so my dad was going to be a jockey, and he wanted nothing to do with it. But I convinced him because I went to Chris's school, and it was college credited. And I said, Dad, I'm going to go to school, and I can learn how to ride. So he got on board. And then Dylan came next, and then Katie. And Trevor's like a brother now, so he's family. And we all go out there, and we have a really good time. And really, it doesn't matter where we finish as long as we beat each other. And a lot of bragging rights and teasing, and it we just have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
I see on social media, and there was an ABR interview with Katie and Trevor. You have a cute little niece, too. She must be a lot of fun.
Oh, I love her. I got lucky because I was in Aqueduct when she was born, so I was in the house with them. And I missed her so much when I left for Finger Lakes. She lights up the room. It's adorable.
Like I say, social media and whatnot looks very cute. Well, let's go back. We're going back A little over a week ago, almost 2 weeks ago at this point, and we're going to watch the stretch run, Valleluia. And then I pulled up a little shot of the PPs, and I pulled up a shot of the PPs because folks will see over in the owner's slot, East Avenue Racing. They will see in the trainer slot, Robbie Davis. So there was a lot of tie-in, and just talk a little bit about first the race, and then we'll get to the post-race as well. But how does this feel when you're coming down the stretch and you're getting the feeling, oh, I'm going to win at Saratoga. Not only win at Saratoga, but with this horse, how did it feel?
Yes. Actually, there's a lot of pressure riding for Dad because he is my dad. And I feel like a bug rider every time I get ready in the jocks room to ride from. I get that stomach curling. But it all goes away when we go in the gate. So I'm sitting on the rail, and we're coming to the quarter pole, and I'm sitting there going, oh, man, I got horse. Where am I going to go? And I was looking around to see if I could go in or out. And I know the elbow, a lot of times horses like to drift. And I nobody was liking the rail here since they got here, I guess. Well, since I've been here. And I saw my opening. And as soon as I saw the opening, I shot for it. And I don't want to cuss, but I was very excited coming to the lane. And I've ridden win for Dad before, but it's always very special. It always feels like I'm winning my first race when I ride for him, or win for him.
I saw him in the winner's circle after, because it was actually the day I had Dylan on, and so I saw your dad in the winner. He was over the moon, obviously. But I have a couple of pictures as well. I have you on the horse walking into the winner's circle, and then a shot of you in the winner's circle.
Oh no.
It was just again the Saratoga crowd is so much fun, but being tied in with local owners. How did you feel walking back? Because there was applause and people were it was just so much fun,
man,
to see. And talk about the feeling, you know, walking into the winner's circle in that situation.
I was beside myself. Just even galloping back and going to the wire, hearing the crowd roar. It felt like, I've never ridden the Travers or any of those races, but it sounded the same kind of roar. And I just the overall response from the public and I know if you know the backstory to how the owners came together.
Yeah, fill us in because it is a great story.
Oh man! So during COVID, nobody was allowed on the track, and they're avid photographers. They're like professionals, a lot of them, and they're on the opposite side of the fence. And my dad would go to the fence with one of his horses. I can't remember which one, but and talk to them. And I know he said, "Well, why don't you guys get together and buy a horse?" And turns out they got together and bought a horse and brought him to Dad, and they said. They said, now the track's not going to get rid of us. We're going to be able to be here and do what we want. And they're such great people. And my dad and mom, they work together in the barn. They're hard workers. And they deserve every moment of this. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's the East Avenue Racing Group, which I've heard the story going back. And it was just, it was fun for me. I'm just a fan. But to see them all happy and your dad happy and you come in and the applause coming into the winner's circle was just a lot of fun.
And I can't remember last time I gave them any hugs out. And I'm really not a hugger. Like
that, as I say, a very special afternoon and victory, not only tied in you, your dad, but the local owners as well. So, it has to rate up there as kind of a career highlight.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Every time I went for my dad, it just moves. It one tops the next one.
Let's get into your background a little bit, because I was doing some bio information, and one of the things I found very interesting, you worked with the chief, Alan Jerkins.
Yes.
And relate the story, because I read it online. You did the Q&A just recently.
Yeah, yeah.
You were talking about the working the horse out for the chief, and then he canned you, and you had to get back
That's
in.
That's not the first time I was fired over there, no. The first time. I got fired a couple more times, but we don't talk about those stories because I did turn 21 the year I was working for him. But with the jockey school, the last 6 months of our schooling was an internship with a trainer. So we got to either try to pick a trainer, a couple trainers we'd like, and Chris would help. But my dad ran over to Chief because that's who helped him in his career, and he won the Jockey Gold Cup for him with Wagon Limit. And he runs over to him, and he told Chris, he said, Chris McGarry, he said, I want Jackie to work for the chief. And Chris, they told me that Chris goes, are you sure? He's very difficult to work for. And my dad's like, yep, I want her to learn the right way. This is how we're going to do it, and this is how it's going to get done. So I made my way to Gulfstream, and my first day on the job, I walked in. I was dead nervous because I was freelancing at the Paris Pike Thoroughbred Training Center. And the first horse they got me on, I didn't know, but it come to find out it was a tester horse for all the new riders, and only one girl could gallop the horse in the barn. Nobody else, none of the other riders had been there for 20, 30 years, whatever, could gallop this horse. So they put me on, and I'm just going around with my hands down, thinking I'm not doing anything wrong, until the outrider comes flying at me, and I found out I was getting run off with really bad. And I go, oh, shoot. So I go back in. Chief goes, I can't. He's doing his normal like tantrum or whatever he's doing. He says, I can't have you in the barn. This won't work. And I'm almost in tears. I'm crying. I'm like, I didn't cry, but I was very close. And I was like, how am I gonna explain this to my dad and Chris? I got fired the first day. And the assistant Fernando, he was a great guy. Helped me a lot when I was there, and he said, just wait 10 minutes, go back in, and he'll calm down. Don't worry, Jack. You can ask. Just say you really want to, you know. So I walk in, I go, boss, I said Mr. Jerkins, and I found out he didn't like that. And I go, Mr. Jerkins, I'm sorry. You know, I just want to learn. Please give me another chance. And he goes, well, he didn't really hesitate, so he respected, I guess, like coming in there. And he goes, you can't gallop. You're not okay to gallop yet. He goes, but I'm going to give you three horses to get on, and then you're going to just work around the barn. And I said, yes, sir. And you're only going to get $200 before taxes. So I was like, fine. I'll take it. I just want to be here. And I also would run. And so I took it and I progressed, and I was almost a year with him. And I was galloping 10 horses a day, and he was like, I was doing really good. I learned. You learned over there. Yeah. It was great. And he asked me to go to Florida with him, and I said I wanted to start my bug. And my heart melted because he told me that they needed me down there. And that means I really, I became the exercise rider, and I was in the right progression. So it was wonderful, and I miss him every day.
Yeah,
I think about
everybody around the racetrack does. He was great. I had him sit in here a couple of times, and those are some of the better memories. Yeah, reflect a little bit because it's not there anymore, at least in the format it was, but the Chris McCarron Jockey School. And I guess from what I read, you were kind of in the initial class down there. So what was that like?
I was in the inaugural class, and I had a lot of people have different experiences from it. So I can't say on behalf of anybody else, but I had a wonderful experience. I learned a lot. We did a lot of groundwork. I was groomed. I ended up at the end of my first year, I was grooming three horses. I had to have my stall immaculate, my horse great, or else Chris would sit us out and we wouldn't ride. So he was very on top of us. He was there every day, and we did testing. Like I had to put four polos on in under 6 minutes. I had to have a perfect V, everything, and then I had to put a bridle together from scratch in under 3 minutes. That was like our final testing, and like we did horse anatomy. So I got associates in equine science.
Oh, nice.
So I went to Bluegrass Community College at the same time. So I did a lot of classes at the community college as well. And I worked two jobs full time. Two jobs and school full time to just make ends meet. And so I did what I had to do to get, you know, and it was a great experience. And like I said, Chris was wonderful. I love Chris. I gave him a big hug yesterday. I was so excited to see him.
Yeah, no, for folks who don't remember, he had the jockey school down in Kentucky, and I think a lot of people got their start there. And then take us through the progression. So you left there and then went on to...
I went to Chris McCarron. And I'm not Chris McCarron. I went to the Chief. I worked for him for almost a year. And then I rode my first race here the end of 2008, Labor Day weekend, here in Saratoga.
Oh, your first race ever was
it was in here. And I don't know how they let me, but I did. I rode on the turf course my first race. And a lot of racetracks, bug riders, 10-pound bugs are not allowed to ride the turf, period, like at all. And so I rode 5.5 on the inner turf on the hedge. And my dad was like, okay, let me tell you how to do this, because this is more complicated than normal. So he said, the hedge is, the turns are short, the hedge is out. So what you have to do, going to the turn, you have to give your horse a little room to switch leads so you don't run the hedge over or anybody over. So, and then he's like, you know what? Just follow the guy in front of you. Do what he does. So I sat third the whole way around until the quarter pull, and I was on an older horse, and I think I finished seventh. But I thought I was doing something, and I wasn't, but I... It was exciting.
I hadn't thought about that till you brought it up, but I'm thinking that has to be a bonus to have a dad who was an experienced jockey and rode as well as your father, Robbie Davis, did.
Yep.
To rely on and maybe get some career advice from as you kind of start things out.
Not even just starting out. And whenever I make moves now, I still get his opinion because my dad has been through everything and he knows more. Obviously, he's my dad and he knows the racing industry. But I did. I asked him my moves, and when I had the bug, I did Aqueduct and Monmouth, and then I shipped four nights a week to Penn National.
Okay.
So I did a 3-hour drive 4 nights a week to ride the tenth race. But I just wanted to ride, and I did. I ended up winning over 60 races with the bug, and then when I lost the bug, everybody was coming back from Gulfstream, so I'm going, I have to get out of here because I'm not. I'm logical about and realistic about my career. And I called my dad, and there was an agent from Suffolk Downs calling me every day, every other day. And I was like, I don't know. And my dad's like, go. Like, just go.
Yeah.
And then I asked the chief about the agent, and I actually asked Nick Santagata because he knows the people up there. And a bunch of people and a few other people that I trusted. And they said, if you can get that agent, get out of here.
Yeah.
So I was fighting for leading rider up there at that point. Well, my first year, I was fourth. And then the next 3 years I was there, I was fighting for leading rider, and I was leading turf rider in Suffolk.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
I didn't make it to Suffolk until, I think it was the second to last summer, but we knew what was on the horizon. They were doing that little boutique meet.
And
they were getting a great crowd and a young crowd. And I kind of expected a different kind of experience. I got up there. It's like a beautiful facility.
It's amazing.
It disappeared.
I know. I cried. Yeah. Well, I'm still upset about it.
Yeah.
But it was a wonderful place. It was located in one of the, right there, you have the airport, the train station, the T, we call it the T, the train station, the subway system was right, you could park your car and get on the T and go to the city.
Yeah.
And it was so historic, and it was such a big family, and they loved girl riders.
Oh, yes,
they had it was the most amazing thing. I've never seen anything like it. They would rather have a woman on their horse than a guy over there. And we had three of us in the top five, about five of us in the top 10, and me and Tammy Pemarine are fighting for leading rider the last 3 years I was there. And she's one of my mentors. She went 2,500 races. And for me to, like, be going tit for tat with her for leading rider, I was so excited. It was so much fun.
Speaking of, you're on the verge of one of those career 100 win mark. You're only, what, 4 or 5 away from 800 at this point?
I'm through. They told me I was 3 away for 800 wins.
Right.
Yeah, I try not to look. Because then once you start looking,
then
it starts
stuck.
Slowing down, and you're not.
There is something weird about that.
It's strange. Yeah. I know. When I got my 600 in Aqueduct, it was very similar. And a couple of friends of mine, they were showing up with a 600 saddle towel. And I was like, guys, don't tell me when you show up. Please just don't tell me. I just want to ride.
There is the mojo somehow that gets very strange.
I'm excited. One of my goals that I set myself was to reach 1,000 races. 1,000 wins, and then from there I'll see where what we're doing there, and I'm excited about that too.
You drove in this morning, and I'm looking. I don't see the Easy Pass tape to the windshield, but I'm guessing there has to be an Easy Pass that is in flames because you've been spending a lot of time on the thruway. I'm sure going back and forth earlier this year. It was fun to see you making the move from Finger Lakes and going down and riding on off days down in New York, but now you've been doing it up here at Saratoga. Just talk a little bit about what your weeks are like, Finger Lakes and Naira.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. So when I initially left Belmont, we weren't expecting to ship much. And it turned out the business was good. So, and I was making money winning. And so I was like, well, we're going to keep doing this until it dries out, I guess, you know? And I was flying from Rochester to JFK.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't driving because that's a 5-hour drive.
I do
that every week.
Yeah.
I said, I can't.
Yeah.
I can't. And then in Finger Lakes, we work hard. The jockeys do a lot of galloping because there aren't many gallop people there, and it's a smaller track. So I will get on between 6 and 10 in the morning, and then I will ride the card.
Yeah.
So I said, I'm not. So my flyer miles were racking up. And then when we came here, I started driving because it's 3 hours, and it was a lot easier. It was a lot easier. And then I have my parents here and the family, and I try to stay a couple extra days on the dark days. And nobody's gotten mad at me yet over there. So we've been just riding it out. And I will be staying here an extra week because I did get days.
We certainly have enjoyed watching you going back and forth. And as you said, you've had a nice success down in the New York area, but a nice meet so far up at Finger Lakes.
Can't wait for
well.
Aqueduct again.
And yeah, it's been.
We're expecting to have a better Aqueduct meet. And I'm holding on to, like, my Aqueduct trainers that I did very good for are the ones that are asking me to come here. And I've been doing really well for them here. So I'm hoping everything transitions over to Aqueduct and I can move. It was the first time I was in the top 10 in Aqueduct.
Very good.
So I'm hoping to move down the ladder to sneak by them a little bit, the guys, and hopefully they don't notice me. But they will, because they do. They always do.
And it's good to have those goals. Hit the top 10 and then move up. We'll certainly be rooting for you, because, as I say, it's kind of been fun to watch you bouncing back and forth over the last year or so between the Naira tracks and up at the Finger Lakes. And when you get out there, say hello to our friend Tony Kahlo as well.
Me and him, we always do our Twitter back and forth, and I see him all the time out there.
Yeah, Tony's
a
lot of fun.
I will.
As a Saturday morning guest, you get a gift card to Jacob and Anthony. So we appreciate your stopping by and enjoy dinner downtown at Jacob and Anthony's.
Very cool.
Appreciate the visit and the conversation. And again, it was just a lot of fun to see a win for your dad up here at Saratoga and the locally based owners as well. So I wanted to talk about that and more. Really appreciate the visit. Good luck going forward. I know you have a couple of mounts over the weekend, so we'll be rooting for those and going forward as well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. We'll take a break. He's in the house. Eric Reed, trainer of Rich Strike. We'll talk a little bit about the Derby and more. Stay tuned.
For four generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Capital OTV is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTV TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTV live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTV TV. OTV TV on Roku. Try it now.
Hello everyone, I'm Scott Vartley and I'm here at the West Condominiums in Saratoga Springs. And guess what? We are down to the home stretch. Everything is two bedrooms and two baths. Come make a selection in one of the greatest condos ever to be built in Saratoga Springs. We're starting in the upper fives and the only rooftop penthouse available now under construction. Wow, just look at this patio. We have a rooftop pool, heated garage, balconies, and a gym. Call me at 518-281-6808.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Again, it is Saturday, Travers morning here, and as I said earlier, it is turning out to be what I would assume will be a gorgeous afternoon, because it is a very, very nice morning here. And our next guest, very tied into the Saturday aspects up here at Saratoga, because he has a runner this afternoon in the Travers. It's the Kentucky Derby winner, Rich Strike. Rich Strike's trainer, Eric Reed, joins us now. Eric, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Happy to have you on. I always, when I get new folks in, up here at Saratoga. Our audience, I think, is full of new fans and really old fans who maybe aren't familiar with you either because they're more New York-centric, perhaps. So I always like to get backgrounds on people. And it seems like reading some bio information about you, you kind of had a family background in horse racing.
Yeah, my dad started off, you know, he was a trainer, and I was with him probably from the time I was 6 years on, and every weekend and every summer break, and it was something I loved my whole life. So by the time I was 12, I knew what I wanted to do, and thank the Lord I got to do it.
Where were you based?
Lexington. He had a lot of horses in training. He didn't race as many, but he was developed a lot of young horses and sent them off to other trainers, and we had some really good horses go through the barn, and I learned a lot through that. But my dad was a really good horseman.
Yeah, as you said that, I was going to say that probably to move on to a career as a trainer, getting started developing two-year-olds is probably a great way to learn all about the game.
Oh, yeah, you learn the game, you know, from the ground up. And once I showed as much interest, I think, as I did, by the time I was 14 or 15, every trainer out there was taking me under their wings and showing me this, showing me that. Of course, my dad was pushing me pretty hard, and he wanted to make sure I learned just what kind of world I was getting into, because it's not an easy life to live. It's 7 days a week and no breaks, no holidays.
And I see what comes around goes around, because I saw when I did bioinformation, your daughter has followed in the footsteps as well.
Yes, yes. Lindsay's, she outworks three guys, and she takes it real serious, and she's an animal lover, period. So whatever we got going with us with Lindsay, I think one day, you know, we'll see her in the winner's circle training her own horses.
Nice, very nice. When you sat down, we were talking because you've had Rich Strike up here, and you're down in Dale Roman's barn down on the far turn, and you told me you and Dale started together.
Yeah, I guess it was all, there was three of us in the barn at Turfway back then. It was called Atonia. And we were in barn 7 on the south side, which is not even there anymore. And they had Dale and myself and Jack Bohannon, who had just stepped away from Rusty Arnold as assistant trainer. And so you had three green young guys training a bunch of horses. And I talked to Jack Bohannon at Churchill a couple weeks ago, and I said, did you ever think we would end up like this? And he said, no, but I remember some days when we were eating peanut butter and hoping we could get something for meat for dinner, you know. So.
Yeah, very good.
Good times.
Yeah. Well, let's go back. Let's go back to the first Saturday in May, and I pulled up the stretch run here. Rich Strike is going to be the number 21 horse. Epicenter and Zandon, the 3 and the 10. About mid-stretch, I had the Epicenter, Zandon exact. And then all of a sudden, here comes Rich Strike. Give us your feeling watching this stretch. This has to be just amazing to be around the game as long as you have been and to have your horse come and make a run like this in the Kentucky Derby. So your feeling is they're coming down the stretch, you and your team.
I was so excited to see that he looked like he was going to hit the board in mid-stretch. And he ran up on the back of Messier, and I thought, oh, my God, there it went. And he got by him, and at that point, it was kind of a blur. I mean, everything went silent. I didn't hear the crowd anymore. I couldn't hear the call of the race anymore. And I really, people don't understand, I didn't see Epicenter or Zandon. I was watching Rich Strike, and I was trying to make sure nobody was going to come up behind us and beat us out of third money. And the guy beside me, Ken Tyson's going, oh, my God, oh, my God. And then I saw how close he had gotten to those two. And then I was like, where's the wire? And we start screaming and hollering and he gets to the lead, and I guess I was holding my breath. I don't know, but I kind of get lightheaded, and somebody grabs my back, and down I go. And I never saw him cross the finish line in front. So.
Oh, that's incredible. And, you know, again, you win the Kentucky Derby like that. What was just after you revived, what was then the follow-up and the move down to the winner's circle? And I'm also curious what the night was like afterwards.
It was an incredible deal. I was going through the tunnel being dragged by everybody, and my crew that was with me in the paddock, we were all just so happy. And then all these friends of mine, the valets, security, they're running into the tunnel, pat me on the back saying, oh, my God, Reed, way to go. And we get across the track, and I'm more worried about my dad. I keep telling her, where's my dad, where's my dad? Because, you know, he was with me, and he's 76 years old.
It had to be special for him,
too.
Oh,
it was that to me was every bit as good as the win, truthfully. And when we got through with everything, I'm in the Derby Museum, and you know, I'm doing the press conference, and all I'm worried about is how's Richie cooling out? You know, is everything okay in the test barn? Because that's usually I get to see that, and I'm not in there. Didn't even get to the barn until like 9:30 after the race. And I got there, and we spent an hour or so with a bunch of friends that, you know, were waiting on me to get back. Then I had to drive back, you know, to Lexington, and that's a couple, well, about an hour and a half. And got up at 2 in the morning. It was pitch black dark, quiet, and I thought, man, I just had the most incredible dream. So I got my cell phone, turned the flashlight on, and walked and looked on the mantle, because in my dream, that's where I'd put the saddle towel. And I saw it, and I'm like, oh, God, it wasn't a dream. You know,
that's great.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah, that's great. All right, I'm going to have the guys pull up, because I'm sure you've seen this too. Eventually, they put up the overhead shot, and which has had like a million views, because I think if you're a racing fan, or even if you are a racing fan, you look at this overhead shot, and man, your jock makes every right move, and everything goes crazy. And give me your thought when you eventually, I'm sure you've seen this a number of times too, just watching the overhead shot where it just all works out as well as it could have. What were your thoughts when you watched the trip like this?
The first time that I was shown the aerial view was like 2 or 3 days after the race. And it was one of the TV networks had brought it to me, and they were saying, have you seen this? And we weren't on the air. It was before we went on. And I said, man, that's pretty cool. I said, it's amazing what you can do with the computer. And he says, what do you mean? I said, well, that's like a video game, right? And he goes, no, that's the drone footage. I said, no, horses can't go that fast. And he said, Eric, that's the NBC drone footage. So then I was like, wow, you know, there's no doubt what happened today, you know, and why. So he just ran an incredible race on that day, and that's what it takes to win the Derby. And got to have a lot of things go your way, but he ran an incredible race that day.
And again, part of that was with the ride. Talk about your jock, and you know, you go to the Derby and you stick with a jock like that. That had to be special. It clearly was very special for him, as it was for you. And talk about that, sticking with Sonny.
You know, Sonny got us there. I called Sonny back in November before I went to New Orleans for the December race the first time. And I said, Sonny, I've got a horse that I know if we can teach him is good enough to compete. I said, nobody believes this but me. And I said, but if you'll spend 2 or 3 weekends riding a horse that might not win, I said, it may pay off and I get you in the Derby. And he said, Dad, whatever, he calls me Dad. He says, Dad, whatever you want to do, he says, I'm good for it. And we went down, and that first race at the Fairgrounds was a disaster, because he didn't get to train but 1 out of 4 days, and he was just nuts in the paddock. But after that race, in the stretch, he passed a few, but when they got to the wire, he took back off. And he ran all the way up to Epicenter. And I thought, you know, he's got to be okay, or he wouldn't have tried that hard after everything that went bad. So we gave him another chance, and he stepped up really big in the United States. And we gave him another chance, and he stepped up super good. Next, I knew we were on the way. And, I, you know, we're small stable. We're all family. I couldn't ever imagine not riding Sonny. And to me, the whole Derby experience was about getting my crew and family and Sonny to participate. If we could find a way on points to get in, we had already won. So, you know, we were in, we were out, we were in, we were out. When we got in, all the weight was gone. I mean, we were actually going to be in the race. And, you know, it was what happened after that's just a miracle.
Well, talk about that, though. Once you got in, what was the confidence level? And I'm looking at the PPs here, and he did have – that, again, this is an amazing part of the story, too. He did have the big win at Churchill, but it wasn't only a big win. You guys claimed him for $30,000 out of that race. So did you have some confidence thinking, oh, the win over the track, but also go back to what was the impetus for claiming the horse?
Well, we were looking. Rick had just been in the business a few years. He had some rough luck. He came to me and wasn't sure he wanted to stay in the business. So I told him, I said, maybe we need to go claim you a couple two-year-olds rather than yearlings. Just let you have some fun, win a race or two if possible, and you'll know if you want to do this.
Win a race or two, like the Derby.
Yeah. So, you know, we're looking for two-year-olds, and we actually picked another horse in the race to claim. And it looked almost too good to be true, so you know it's probably too good to be true. But we decided to go on and drop on the horse. And then I'm looking to see if there's anybody in the race that might win and save that condition. And I kept coming to Rich Strike, because he had all these fantastic workouts before his first start at Ellis, and he was from good connections. And he was 4-1, so obviously he has some respect. and they ran him on the turf, which to me was the weird thing. So I called Rick and I said, this horse right here might be a heck of a claim, because I think the turf is the only reason he ran so poorly. I said, he was working great before and he's worked good since. So he goes, well, what if he doesn't like the dirt? And I said, then he's a bad claim, but I said he wouldn't be working that good.
Yeah.
And so we dropped on both horses. Well, we got out shook on the original horse, who never ran again. And we got Rich Strike.
That in itself is a crazy story. Not only you claimed him, but he was your second choice, and you lost the shake on the first.
And that horse never started again.
That's amazing. And it just, as I say, an incredible story. Talk a little bit about coming into the Travers. What are your expectations this afternoon? I mean, it looks like he is working very well. How long has he been here, and how is he working up to the race?
He's been here a couple weeks, and from the first day we got here, he's been really relaxed, skipped across the racetrack. He couldn't have trained better, and Gabriel Lagunas that gets on him, he flew out last night because he's riding a bunch of horses back home today. But he told me the horse has never been this good. And when we worked him the other morning, our plan was to go 49 or 50, and he went 46 and change and was just doing it so easily. But that's why I like to work him a little farther away in case he wants to overdo it. But he came out of that, and the next day we almost had to take him back to the track. He was feeling so good. The horse could not do any better. But it's a field full of stars, and he's got the worst running style of all of them. So, you know, we're optimistic that we're going to get a good race. If we win, that's just going to be another one of those shocking races for everybody. But he's capable of doing that, but all the cards have to fall into place.
Yeah, it's always fun to have the Kentucky Derby winner show up in the Travers, and Rich Strike, no exception. So we wish you a lot of good luck this afternoon, certainly. What are your impressions here and over the years of Saratoga as a racing venue, a guy who has been around at different venues in the country? Talk a little bit about, I'm a homer, so I always like to hear what the impression is of people who are based out of town when they come to Saratoga.
This is a place where everybody should come and enjoy. It's a great place to train. Everyone is in a happy attitude. It's like you're at a vacation resort, and you go to the beach, there's 300 people, but everybody's happy.
Yeah.
You know, there's nobody that's all serious and grumpy, and, you know, they get out of bed every day, and they don't really want to be there doing what they're doing. It's a very, and so beautiful, so beautiful. It's a horse-friendly area. So I've told all my friends, I said, doesn't matter if you run or go spend a weekend at the spa, and you'll have a memory you'll treasure for a lifetime, because it is gorgeous here.
Yeah, I mean, Horse Players Heaven kind of a place, just because, not the racing is great and the weather and whatnot, but I say it all the time, the fans are just so knowledgeable up here. Yeah. It's just a lot of fun.
You can't go in a tavern or a restaurant where they're not horse racing on the TV, and everybody's just happy here. It's a great place.
And before I let you go, I also wanted to tie in the story to your training center. You have the Mercury Training Center down in Kentucky. And this also plays into how spectacular that the whole story behind the Kentucky Derby win was, too. You had kind of a major setback with a fire down there, and I guess you were on the verge of maybe, hey, we're out of the game, and then folks rallied around. So relate that story, but then also talk about the training center in general.
Well, the night of the fire was one of those December storms that rolls through Kentucky once in a while. It was like in the mid-60s that day, and temperature dropped 40 degrees in a few hours. They were calling for big storms that night, and about 11:45, get a phone call, and my night watchman's like, the barn's on fire. Well, I don't know if he means attack room or... So I said, have you called 911? He goes, yes. Then my God, it's... the barn's on fire. So then I'm realizing it must be real serious. And we get to the farm, and it was a huge barn. It had 60 stalls in it. And the first third of the barn was engulfed. I had four guys that we gathered up, and we're running in and out of the barn trying to get horses out. And the horses naturally want to run back into the fire. And one of my guys...
And people don't realize it. That's like home to them.
They're afraid, and that's where they want to go. And they don't, you know, that's their safe spot no matter what.
Yeah.
So we have to take the horses and run them down to one of the paddocks and cut them loose far enough away, and then we have to run back to the barn. So by the time we did that, the fire jumped two more stalls, and we'd lost, you know, four horses, two on each side, and we get the next ones and we run out, and then the first half of the barn collapsed, and I told everybody, I said, that's it, we can't go back in. And one guy who got out of bed and had not a stitch of clothing on, I mean, no shoes, socks, nothing, he was burned. He had run in and out and got some horses, just, you know, just a horrible night. But we saved 13, and you know, we got through it. I thought for a while it was over, but the kindness of the trainers and people that I'd never met came, and they kept me going. When the first horse went back to the track, I said, I gotta continue on. I can't let these horses perish in vain and feel sorry for myself. And I had my whole crew there. They were hurt as bad as me, or worse. So I'm picking everybody's spirits up, and we got these horses going back to the track. Everybody was ready. We didn't want to quit at that point. It saved us. And Mercury's just a beautiful place now.
And again, what was this, 3 or 4 years ago?
It was 2016.
Okay, so we're, what, talking?
6 years, yeah, five and a half. Yeah.
And pretty much rebuilt at this point.
Yeah, when I purchased the farm 16 or 17 years ago, and it was originally part of the old Spendthrift Training Center. And when they went bankrupt in the 80s, it was purchased, and it had gotten pretty run down when I bought it. And we spent about a year redoing it and bringing it back to life. And it's a beautiful, beautiful facility. And other than that night, it's the greatest thing that ever happened to me as a trainer. And, you know, my wife, she runs that farm. It's like her house. She keeps it just as clean as most people go home and clean. And my daughter works there. It's a family affair. All the guys that are with me now were with me that fateful night of the fire. So thank goodness they're having some enjoyment in the game after being part of the worst of the game. But it is a gorgeous place, and the horses, they thrive there. They get to be turned out after racing. They got a great track to train on, a good starting gate. It's a very nice place.
And again, just another part of the story with the fire and that kind of the tragic day there, and where you're debating, do we go on with the game and eventually persevere and not only get back to the racetrack, claim the horse for $30,000 and win the Derby. You have to love the whole story. Eric, we appreciate the visit. We wish you a lot of good luck this afternoon. As a Saturday guest on the show, you get dinner downtown at Jacob and Anthony's on us. So go down and enjoy dinner downtown and enjoy the town as well. But again, we appreciate the visit this morning. Congratulations on the Derby victory. Oh, I have to ask you before you go, did you buy any souvenir T-shirts that don't include your number?
We have. I got a bunch for the family to bring home.
That was it. If folks aren't familiar with the story, they printed up the official Kentucky Derby T-shirt, which only went to horse number 20, and you guys scratched in as horse number 21.
Yeah, we had 21. There was nothing.
Eric, again, appreciate the visit. Good luck
Thanks
this afternoon.
So much. I appreciate it.
All right, we will take another break. When we come back, we have those tape pieces I talked about earlier, a little bit with Brad Cox, a little bit with John Velasquez, all of that when Racing Across America continues. Stay tuned.
Juvenile fillies turf, 14 of them across the track. Sent on their way. And the dance on the outside, broke a little sideways with Pro KK, but meanwhile it's going to be stopped. But running on now, and Somali Lemonade's got eight to make up. They come to the top of the lane, stop shopping. Maria's got a lot left. Stop shopping. Maria goes on. Sweet Cat is right there. Hard not to like. Royal Body is running on. Past the eight ball, they come. Stop shopping. Maria for the run. Still under a hand ride as they come to the 16th. Stephanie's Kitten coming out late. Yes, Stephanie's Kitten coming fast. Stephanie's Kitten, stop jumping area. Stephanie's Kitten's water.
The chances broke smartly, but so did Terra from the Cape. On the inside, Sky Lantern the Grey going well. If he can get through, Sky Lantern the Grey looking for somewhere to run. Wide, wide open. It's Tara from the Cape hanging on. Tara from the Cape tries to go all the way. On the outside now, here comes Flotilla in the light blue. Flotilla is absolutely flying. Watch the chances in there too. But Flotilla has gone right on by. And Flotilla is coming home to score. Flotilla has won it just about two in the end. It'll be Watch the Chances, Summer of Fun, coming on to finish, sir.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. It is Saturday, Travers Day here at Saratoga. And, of course, we are live from our Clare Court location, which is always a lot of fun. The horses have pretty much stopped working out. And I think the game plan, we had Mike Welch in on Thursday, who's, you know, obviously watching the workouts. And I asked on Travers Day with an early post time, when do work stop? And I think he said about 8:30 on the main track. And I think pretty much the same time they stop on the main track, they kind of wrap up here. Occasionally, you know, we'll see horses just kind of jogging in the trees back there a little bit later in the morning. But it seems like I haven't seen anybody really. When I first got here, there was a crowd back here, but it seems like it's kind of thinned out a little bit. So I think that probably the timing works at the main track and this track as well. Things probably calm down 8:30 or 9. But there will be plenty of action out there on the main track in just a few hours. Don't forget, post time today on Travers Day is early. The early post time for race number one, 11:35 with 13 races. There will be an extra pick five, an extra pick four in the mix today. Should be a lot of fun. Once again, with the weather over the past day or so, there's one race off the turf. That's race number two today. So adjust your handicapping accordingly. Race number two is off the turf. The other turf races are on today. I just wanted to go back to last night because we had Todd Pletcher in a couple of days ago, and we talked a little bit about mind control in last night's Charlestown Classic. $1 million up for grabs down at Charlestown. Mind control, I haven't watched the replay yet, but according to one of the articles I read, Mind Control got off to maybe a little stutter step at the start. That left it open for Art Control to take it all the way around. Art Control, who won this race last year, and with the victory, yeah, it goes well over $2 million in earnings. The five-year-old for Bill Mott was coming out of a win in the Aladar, goes down and wins the Charlestown Classic last night. The same scenario as last year. Won the Aladar up here and then went down and won the Charlestown Classic. Luis Saez was on board for the victory last year, on board again last night. Madib, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, a locally based runner, was kind of chasing Art Collector all the way around and held for second, and Mind Control third. They were pretty close, second and third. Art Control wound up by a chart margin of just over four lengths. But again, down at Charlestown last night, Charlestown Classic Art Collector got it done for trainer Bill Mott and Luis Saez on board. All right, I mentioned it earlier. A couple of taped pieces here as we wrap up with this last segment, and I will come back after this and introduce the next one with Brad Cox. But we're going to start out with John Velasquez a couple of days ago. Easy guy to root for. John, we've had him on the show before. I did a tape piece with him earlier this season. Grabbed it over in the jocks room, probably the first week of the meet. But he's always accommodating, very nice guy. This winter down at Gulfstream, he did the bobblehead signing, and we've had some video of that when we were down there for Florida Derby weekend. But again, he's been a mentor to a lot of the jocks in the jocks room. He's a good representative for the jocks via the Jockeys Guild. And so, as I say, an easy guy to root for, and there was a lot of rooting going on. The crowd was fabulous a couple of days ago when John Velasquez got his 1,000th career victory here at Saratoga. I mean, he said plenty more, but 1,000 just here at Saratoga. So, again, a little bit on that achievement, but also I was in the winner's circle as he was interviewed by the press, so I picked up a little bit from that post-race interview. And then I also got him as he walked back to the jocks room A few years ago, I did a tape of Ramon Dominguez after he had a spectacular day at Saratoga and got video of him going back to the jocks room with fans lining both sides of the walk back. And it was the same a couple days ago with John Velasquez. The fans were all the way back applauding, taking selfies, getting autographs. So a little bit of that as well. So again, going back a couple days ago, here's John Velasquez after career victory at Saratoga, number 1,000.
It is precursory, trying to hold off Tizzy in the sky. It is precursory, and this is going to be a Saratoga moment for the ages. Win number 1,000 at the Spa for Hall of Fame jockey Johnny Velasquez.
It meant a lot to me, actually. This is very special, like I was saying earlier, though. It was very special for Angel. Angel made it special for me. You know, he wanted to put that in my head that when I came here to Saratoga, you have to thrive here. If you thrive here in Saratoga, you can thrive everywhere you go. That kind of grew at me little by little, as I got better. And I understood the meaning of being right in Saratoga and the meaning that sacrifice all the things that you have to do with the family and everything and try to do what's best. Being here in Saratoga, you know, it's all worth it. I mean, obviously, my family is here with me, and they've done everything that I can do with them, and be with them whenever I have the time. But yes, it's a special place to be here and be with my family. This is where I met my wife, and 28 years later, we're still together. 2 years ago, I mean, 3 years ago, my wife's looking at the standing, and she's like, "You put to 1,000. We got to keep going for 1,000." It's like, when? Who are you? Where is that coming from? Like, I mean, when do I actually follow stats and numbers? Like, if it gets there, we get there. If we don't, I might be retired by then. I told her, and now I got to kind of roll it up. No, you can't retire without winning. So I might be retired by then. Who cares? It's like, I'm going to ride. I'm going to enjoy my time. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But that's the conversation that I had with my wife 3 years ago. I might be retired by then. I might even get there. So, but it's being here and doing it, and with them being, you know, having the support from what they have given me all these years, is special. We gotta say it's special. But like I said, like, it's a number. It's one day I retire and I look back, and it's definitely very special.
And again, congratulations to John Velasquez on career victory number 1,000 here at Saratoga the other day. You can see his wife Leona in the winner's circle afterwards, and father-in-law Leo O'Brien. And he was talking to his kids via FaceTime on the phone. So it was, again, a fan popular moment up here at Saratoga when he came back. There was multiple ovations from the crowd during it. They had a tribute video on the big screen after the victory. And then, as you can see, I say it all the time, Saratoga fans are so great. They were waiting for him to come back to the jocks room, all the way back to the jocks room, folks were lined up along the jockey path to get the selfies and the autographs and just applaud the achievement. So, again, congratulations to John Velasquez on that. Also, a couple of days ago, I caught up with Brad Cox. He was in the paddock before a race, and I said, hey, Brad, can I get you for a minute or two to talk a little CyberKnife? Brad's always very accommodating. So, again, talking a little bit about CyberKnife and how he's doing coming into the race and what Brad expects this afternoon in the Traverse from CyberKnife. This is trainer Brad Cox.
And then Taba, they turn for home. It's Jack Christopher in front. Howling Time. Taba switches to the outside, and he's now putting in a strong bid. And here comes Taba. Taba in the center of the track with good-looking stride. Squares off with CyberKnife. CyberKnife takes the lead. Taba going with him. These two in a thriller. CyberKnife just in front. And CyberKnife has won the TVG.com Haskell over Taba. Jack Christopher finished third.
Well, he's Mother Haskell in great shape. That's why, obviously, we're here. We've had 5 weeks to prepare. He's had three works over the main track here. His last two moves have been big 5/8 moves with good gallop outs. And, you know, we really he settled in here at Saratoga really well. He trained up here last summer a little bit, so I feel confident we're going to get a big effort out of him on Saturday.
Any concerns about the one post position, or are you happy with that?
No, not really at all. I always think like on a mile and a quarter, post position is probably a touch overrated. Just hopefully breaks running, gets a good position early, and see what happens. But right now, I can't. I mean, post position is normally something you complain about after a race, really.
And the only other time he was a mile and a quarter was the Derby. Any concerns about the distance?
No, not really. That was a throw out, too fast, too early. I'm confident that, you know, he can get the mile and a quarter, given the right trip, right setup, and you know, I felt based off of his performance in Arkansas, based off his performance in Haskell, those are his previous races going a mile and eighth, that, you know, he's very capable of getting another either one.
Expectations on Saturday?
To be right there at the end. I really feel that. I feel like he's a good, honest colt. He's got a very good race record with the exception of the Derby, which we feel like we had an excuse, and throw out the LeComp, which I don't think he was quite ready for that at that point in time. And he's got a tremendous race record, and hopefully we can you know, add a W to his resume.
Good luck.
Thanks, Seth. Appreciate it.
Again, thanks to Brad Cox for taking some time in the paddock a couple of days ago to update us on CyberKnife. CyberKnife, to me, very dangerous. I used Epicenter, but CyberKnife is very dangerous in here. Going to root for Rich Strike. Again, it was fun to talk to Eric Reed this morning, and appreciate his time as well. And let me just go over today's lineup again. Thanks to Brad Cox for taking the time in the paddock. Congratulations to John Velasquez on the 1,000th Saratoga career victory. And again, appreciate Eric Reed stopping by. Always, you know, you would have to think an active morning for him, being Traverse Day with the Kentucky Derby winner. We caught him. He's down in Dale Roman's barn, which is just down on the far turn. So we caught him on the got our golf cart and gave him a ride here and back, and appreciate his swinging by on this Traverse morning to talk about that Derby victory and more. And happy to have had Jackie Davis in at the top of the show. She was fun to talk to as well. That victory, again, it was about a couple of weeks ago with Valleluya for the locally based owners. That was a lot of fun. But Jackie getting the victory for her dad as well. And as they say, coming into the winner's circle with all the locals involved and people outside the winner's circle, there was a nice little ovation there. It was a lot of fun. And I've been trying to get Jackie ever since. And so that she was in town over the weekend, we worked it out this morning. Really appreciated the conversation with her this morning as well. All of which brings us to the end of a Saturday edition of Racing Across America, a Saturday Traverse edition. Where did the summer go? But it's always like this. Once we kick things off, it zips right through. We'll get through Traverse Day, and we'll still have 7 days of racing left tomorrow, and then 6 days of racing. At this point, we have 8 days left. I shouldn't zip through Traverse Day yet because we have the whole card coming up. Again, it'll kick off at 11:35, so we're looking at about an hour and a half down the road. When I wrap up, I would assume the NYRA pregame show will be on fairly shortly after I wrap things up with the 11:30 post time, so I'll send you to that, and I will wrap it up for Racing Across America. But we appreciate your tuning in. Again, if you're coming up, I think it's going to be a gorgeous day today. Certainly a great race card. There are some races where maybe betting-wise, it's not as attractive as you might like, but fan-wise, it's going to be great. And you just have to pick your spots. There'll be opportunities to make money. Take my word for it. If you can't make it up here, again, go down to the clubhouse Racebook or stop at one of the branches, fire up your account on your phone or your tablet or your computer, and you can watch from home, and we will have the live racing here on the network all afternoon long, so that's an option as well. However, I'm going to wrap it up. Don't forget, we have the early start today because of the early post time, but we're back at our regular times tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, it's 9 a.m. for the handicapper support. It's 10 a.m. for Loose on the Lead with myself and Steve Bick. So we're looking forward to that. But as I say, enjoy the racing this afternoon. Make some money, cash some tickets, sit back and enjoy some of the nice performances that are expected, including in the Grade 1 Travers. And again, we'll see you tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. for the handicapper support, 10 a.m. for Loose on the Lead. See you then.
For four generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922, 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.